A soaking rain had fallen much of the day, turning the circus lot into a quagmire. By sundown, though, the downpour finally had stopped, and now, on this mid-June night in Boston in 1919, a canary-colored moon hung over the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey tents like a blessing. A show had been underway in the Big Top for more than an hour. It was a little beyond 8 o'clock when two women, one of them in a costume of white and spangled chiffon, plodded to the great tent from the circus's train, idled on a railroad siding a quarter mile away. From a little distance, the costumed woman looked like a child. She was delicate of face and frame, and so tiny, just 4'9". She walked with her eyes cast to the ground, careful to avoid placing her kid slippers into the puddles and depressions left in the mud by the circus's elephants and horses. The woman at her side was her lady-in-waiting and constant companion. She was over 6 feet tall and wore a charwoman's bonnet and a dowdy, ankle-length, cinder-colored dress. Her expression was unchanging in its dolefulness, and she had teeth that leaned every which way, like gravestones in an unattended cemetery. 100 or more of the circus's other attachés were already bunched up at the Big Top's back door by the time the costumed woman and her consort arrived there. The gathering included wire walkers, clowns, the trainers of the big cats, and even some of the sideshow's freaks. Such backdoor groupings always formed when it was close to the time she was about to perform. It was a way for the other troopers to pay regular homage to her. She was queen to the circus's 1,300 performers and laborers, and by far its greatest star. A brassy Napoleonic-sounding composition started playing inside the Big Top, the Crimson Cradle March, a work expressly written for the Queen of the Air, as she was known. The music's sounding was a cue for those gathered at the door. A seam opened midway in the swarm through which she and her maid advanced. A diagonal column of white light aimed from above located her the instant she appeared in the tent, and the roaring that erupted from the crowd was almost fearful. The Big Top shuddered as though it were housing a great cataract like Niagara Falls. There were 15,000 people in attendance this night, a full house. Your great-grandparents or great-great-grandparents could have seen her that night in Boston, or, if not there, maybe in Chicago, San Francisco, Biloxi, or some other town. The Ringling Circus, the most gigantic ever assembled, traveled by train to about 125 towns each year, staying 3, 4, or more days in some of them. The circus put on 2 shows daily, a matinee and evening performance, and often played to 2.5 million people in a season. Its queen was almost certainly seen live by more people of her time than any other single figure in America, whether a prima ballerina, a sports hero, or even the president. With the crowd still cheering, she skipped to the center ring, throwing kisses to every corner of the canvas cathedral. Her attendant was 8 or 10 feet behind her, outside the spotlight, holding a train of white tulle that streamed from her employer. Inside the ring, after taking more bows, she moved to her web, a thick white velvet-wrapped rope that served as her transit way to the Big Top's stratosphere. She started moving upward, hand over hand. Her ascent was made easily, without strain, as if she had simply entered an elevator and pushed a button to the 5th or 6th floor. Then she was in the Big Top's heavens, and now, Even the spectators in the highest seats had to tilt back their heads to see her. Her expression was one of pure rapture, and she appeared to have instantly transformed into a state more Icarus-like than human. And then she was flying, flying, sailing, soaring, swooping. She weighed fewer than 100 pounds on the ground, but up here she seemed to be incorporeal, as heftless as a butterfly. The air embraced her, held her protectively, loved her. She was now aboard a trapeze and moving ever higher in the ether, so high that in her upward swings it appeared she might burst through the canvas ceiling and keep rising until vanishing in the sky. "Mother of God!" the people in the seats cried at the wonder of her. She might have been inside a dream, one of those glorious reveries that maybe everyone has, in which the dreamer discovers that by simply willing it, she or he can lift and fly over church steeples, above mountains, above the clouds.